Hey, Power People. Welcome to Renewable Rides, powered by Vector. I'm Gareth Evans, the CEO and founder.
And I'm Dan Roberts, head of sales. In each episode, we'll uncover the latest trends, learnings, challenges, and triumphs relating to the energy transition, on-site energy, and sustainability through the experiences of our inspiring guests and team here at Vecta.
So get ready for an exhilarating adventure into the fast-paced world of challenging limits, adapting purposely, and empowering co-creation to accelerate the energy transition with those that are on a mission to create a more resilient, profitable, sustainable, and thriving energy future. So let's go. Dan, it's a pleasure to be on another episode of Renewable Rise together. And today, an incredible story. The largest retailer in the world has just achieved an unthinkable milestone. They're able to reduce their emissions equivalent to approximately one-fifth of the United States' annual CO2 emissions from their supply chain. Absolutely bonkers.
Wow.
And today we're going to talk about what reducing your emissions across your supply chain looks like. And it's called Scope 3 Emissions. And we're going to celebrate Walmart's recent success. We often hear people talk about Scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions, but many of us don't actually have a clue what that even means. So Dan, do you want to give us a rundown and an insight?
Yeah, certainly. So we'll start with Scope 1 emissions. So imagine you have a car. Every time you drive it, well, let me take a step back, especially with the amount of electric vehicles coming on the road. Imagine you have a gasoline or diesel vehicle, and every time you drive it, that car burns fuel. And when it burns that fuel, among other things, you have carbon dioxide coming out of the exhaust pipe and directly into the air. Those are Scope 1 emissions. And those are the direct emissions that are the result of you largely burning fuels. And so in a company for utilities, electric utilities that have natural gas or coal-fired power plants, those are Scope 1 emissions. For manufacturing companies that have large thermal loads that have kilns or have steam needs and they run gas boilers, the combustion of those fuels to make that heat, those are Scope 1 emissions from burning those fossil fuels. So probably the easiest to think about, or another example in a business is, again, running with that transportation analogy, you've got a trucking fleet and the fuel that's burned by that trucking fleet would be Scope 1 emissions. Scope 2 emissions is if our listeners were able to think about their house, and many households don't produce their own electricity, so we consume from the utility, or in businesses, we're consuming a lot of electricity. There are emissions associated with the production of that electricity. And if you go to different places in the country or go to different places in the world, the emissions profile or the carbon intensity of that electricity is going to be very different. And it's a result of kind of the overall mix of generation sources of that electricity, whether it be coal, natural gas, in some places oil. But then as the grid is starting to get more solar, wind, hydro has been a great source of clean electricity. Nuclear, there's some debate of whether it's clean or not. I put it into the clean camp, but that dictates the carbon intensity of the electricity. So the carbon emissions associated with the electricity that you consume, though, that is Scope 2 emissions. And largely, it can be some of the easier ones to address, and we'll get more into that. Scope 3 emissions is a bit broader. And imagine every product you buy or every component that goes into your electronic devices, these products or these inputs and these components don't just appear. They were manufactured, they were transported, and they often need to be disposed of after they're done. And all of these steps, both upstream and downstream, are considered Scope 3 emissions. So any of the indirect emissions that are associated with your product or service within a company's value chain are Scope 3 emissions. And so maybe we can look at some of the recent customer examples to provide a little more clarity on this. So within the automaker space, so the automotive OEM or original equipment maker, there's both upstream and downstream examples. So upstream being the parts that go into the vehicle. So whether it be the seats or the seat belts or the actual exhaust system, whatever it may be, those are our upstream emissions. Downstream emissions, the dealerships that are selling the vehicles that are produced by the automaker would be downstream emissions. A packaging manufacturer that is producing the bottles for a beverage company would be upstream emissions. Tenants and building owners or property management firms would be scope 3 emissions. Or aerospace manufacturers that are selling into the U.S. government would be scope 3 emissions for the U.S. government. So a bit of a breakdown on scopes 1, direct emissions, scope 2, indirect or emissions associated with the electricity that you consume, and scope 3, indirect emissions, both upstream and downstream. So, Gareth, how is this actually playing out for businesses?
Yeah, great overview, Dan. And I can see why some people genuinely don't know what these all mean, because it's not straightforward, is it? I think for businesses, scope 1 and 2 are often easily monitored, they're tracked, the businesses are getting far better at reporting them and understanding how they can potentially reduce their scope 1 and 2 emissions. But what we're seeing more and more in the market is businesses trying to figure out, what are these scope 3 emissions? And to put it simply, my scope 3 emissions are your scope 1 and 2 emissions if you were my supplier. And so this is all about, how do we actually reduce our scope 3 emissions if we have no direct control over them? I've got to now influence and encourage you to do something about your emissions such that I can track and prove that I'm doing the right thing for mine. And this is the most challenging component of decarbonization to tackle for companies. It's typically the largest portion of their emissions, and it represents, in some cases, 99% of their overall emissions. And so we can work really hard to reduce our scope 1 and scope 2, but we're left with this huge chunk in terms of scope 3. And I think in the last few years, what we've seen is more and more of our customers and businesses in the industry doing a really good job at starting to reduce their scope 1 and scope 2 emissions, but primarily because they're being driven to do that by the people that they want to sell to. So you're my customer, you're telling me, Dan, I need to reduce my emissions in order to win my next contract with you or to retain the existing contract I have. And so now I am hyper-focused on reducing my own scope 1 and scope 2 emissions to help you reduce yours such that we can all win together. And so we need to figure out a way as an industry to be able to sell our products in a really sustainable way and show that we've got a documented plan, that we actually have demonstrated progress towards that plan, and that then we are actually reporting that progress in a really simple and efficient way. And I think Walmart has truly set the standard in this regard for their operations and their supply chain. And it's a phenomenal story. And Dan, I'd love for you to share what happened just this last week.
Yeah. Let's go back to what this program is. And I agree, Walmart has set the standard of what a scope 3 emissions program looks like. But back in 2017, Walmart announced a bold ambition to work with all their suppliers. So think all the products that you find on Walmart store shelves. So to work with their suppliers to reduce, avoid, or sequester 1 gigaton, which is 1 billion metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions in the product value chains by 2030. So back in 2017, they set out 1 gigaton, which again, harkens back to your opening comment of equivalent to about 1/5 of the U.S. emissions, to eliminate that from their value chain by 2030. And they call it the Project Gigaton. So merchants and suppliers that sell through Walmart were asked by the team that is really driving this Project Gigaton, so to focus on site by site, project by project, year by year, what are the practical things like energy efficiency, on-site energy, packaging redesign, food waste reduction, and transportation or trucking load optimization and electrification to reduce their emissions and therefore reduce Walmart's scope 3 emissions. And we know from many of our customers that they are really conscious of being able to report progress to Walmart, because Walmart is continuing to ask them on an annual basis, not just what they've achieved, but what are their plans for reducing these emissions. So that was a big endeavor, a huge undertaking for them just a little more than 6 years ago. And it's been some big news this week for what they've been able to achieve in the past 6-7 years. What was that, Gareth?
Yeah, Walmart announced that they achieved their billion-dollar ton goal 6 years early. And so just this week, they ticked over that target, gigaton target, and absolutely incredible. there's several ways I think that stood out for me that they achieved this. First of all, they identified ways for them to actually, in the first place, estimate, track, and report these emissions, because a lot of people still haven't figured this bit out. And so they set about in aligning with science-based targets. And I think this could be an entirely new episode all of itself, Dan. So we won't get into science-based targets right now, but needless to say, they use science-based targets to set these goals and objectives and then track against it. What I really like is they set aligned goals and benefits. So as we talked about before, suppliers are encouraged to do this in order to sustain their position as a supplier to Walmart. But then what Walmart was able to do is help educate and collaborate with these suppliers to show mutual benefits of achieving these objectives. And I think what we love most is this quote that said, projects that reduce emissions are also the projects that enhance resilience, reduce costs, and improve quality and create innovative new products for our customers. So through that process, all businesses win because they're reducing Walmart's emissions, but they're also improving their business operations throughout. They really drove this whole immediate and sustained action. So they wanted their suppliers to set their own science-based targets, identify truly practical and achievable projects. And these could be ranging from small incremental impacts to big major retrofits. And then they aligned on what that could look like, when they needed to be achieved by, and then worked together to ensure that they were delivered. They did all this through a tech-enabled platform, which is amazing. So they had all the suppliers set their objectives in their Gigaton platform, verify what they were going to do, and they structured it such that it appealed not only to the small mom-and-pop suppliers, but also for it to be relevant for the big multinationals. They created some unique products, like they had a Gigaton power purchase agreement product. So this is where they created a power purchase opportunity that we've talked about in previous episodes, and they allowed suppliers to buy into that to get access to renewable energy. And I think biggest achievement of all is they pulled together 6,000 of their suppliers. And this is today the largest private sector consortia driving these sort of actions. And so it's super impressive. And I think Walmart, they kind of paused to give themselves a little pat on the back, but they've said, we're not stopping there. We're pressing hard on achieving net zero emissions for their own scope 1 and 2 emissions by 2040. So lots more good news to come, I'm sure. And Dan, these guys have been leading the way for many years. Can you give us an insight into how Walmart is tackling their scope 1 and 2 emissions directly?
Yeah, I've been excited to, as we were talking about putting together this episode, just to celebrate Walmart. And I think it deserves the celebration, because they are, as the largest retailer, truly being a leader. And I think the most exciting thing about all of this is that they are a phenomenal example that sustainability doesn't have to come at the expense of profitability. In fact, quite the opposite. So when we look back to the period between 2016 and 2021, Walmart was able to reduce their scope 1 and 2 emissions from approximately 20 million tons of CO2, of carbon dioxide, to 14 million tons of carbon dioxide, which is a big reduction. And during that time, they were able to grow their revenue from $482 billion to $559 billion. So a very large increase. And a part of that success has been them deploying on-site energy systems at over 600 of their facilities globally to reduce scope 2 emissions. And from our perspective here at Vecta, we absolutely love this story. It really shows and is the shining example that businesses of all shapes and sizes can reduce their scope 2 emissions very efficiently by deploying on-site energy systems. And combining those emissions reductions, they're also able to lower their operating costs, increase their operational resilience, and lower their buyers' scope 3 emissions, which will become a critical success in the future. So this will really be a determinant in the future of where contracts are won and lost based on these factors. So it really helps companies become not just more financially viable, but also more competitive in the larger market. So Vecta's customers use our platform to reduce their own scope 2 emissions, and in some cases, scope 1, primarily through electrification of different systems, whether it be transportation or industrial processes. And then they share our platform with their suppliers to help reduce and mitigate their scope 3 emissions, or help those suppliers reduce their scope 1 and 2 emissions. And this market is really still in the early days and only going to grow. So I think if we're to kind of put a bow on this, in summary, scope 1 emissions, the direct emissions that are from sources within your control, they're from typically burning of fossil fuels. Scope 2 are from the electricity that you consume and the carbon emissions associated with producing that electricity. Now, again, if you produce that electricity on site with clean sources like solar or wind, then there are no carbon emissions associated with that electricity. And then scope 3 emissions, which are the emissions from the transportation or the electricity consumed by your suppliers or downstream from the products that you produce. And energy efficiency and on-site energy are going to play a massive role in reducing scope 1 and 2 emissions, and therefore scope 3 emissions, because those are the scope 1 and 2 emissions of your upstream and downstream suppliers and users. And sustainable operations will only be increasingly profitable operations. So I think they deserve a huge pat on the back from the globe, from society, for driving this effort and encouraging others to follow suit. Any closing thoughts, Gary?
Yeah, they've set the benchmark. And I think we touched on this briefly. Today is more of a carrot mechanism. You know, businesses around the world are encouraging their supply chains to do this and trying to influence them. Very soon, that is going to become a stick. And I think the best businesses in the world are going to get ahead of that, and they're going to differentiate themselves, and they're going to attract and retain the best contracts in the world by being the most sustainable, the most reliable, the most profitable businesses that they can possibly be. So huge opportunity for businesses to get after it and do right, be good, and gain the rewards of it.
No doubt.
It's good times. How are things on the personal front, Dan, now that we've covered the work stuff?
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to this weekend. My wife is out of town for a family baby shower, and it means it's boys' weekend in the Roberts household. So me and my boys have some fun adventures ahead. Definitely some park time, probably some beach time. And I love the one-on-one time to bond with these guys. How about you?
Super good. Not long after we finish this, I'm going to wrap up the week's work, and then I've got a 2.5-hour run ahead of me. So I've got lots of podcast time. So I'm going to enjoy that slow, steady, methodical run. And that's because Ethan's got a rugby tournament up in LA tomorrow, so I can't run tomorrow. So I've got to adapt purposefully, got to switch the schedule around a bit and squeeze it all in. But excited to go up to LA, watch him play rugby. And then afterwards, the pros are playing in the LA Sevens, so we get to catch some of the international pros play. So super excited. And then F1 season starts this weekend. Really stoked on that. I managed to catch the whole Drive to Survive season this week while running on the treadmill. So I'm prepped, raring to go, and excited to see Ferrari thrash everyone.
I love it. I love it. I love, one, just your absolute relentless discipline when it comes to this running schedule as you prepare for this 100-mile run. It is encouraging. It is inspiring. And I hope some of our listeners reach out and want to learn a little bit more, because I know it's grueling, but there's more to come on that front over the coming months.
And if anyone wants to get out there and put in some miles together, I'm all ears.
Love it. All right. Take care, Gareth. Good luck on this run.
Cheers, man.
We receive a lot of questions from business leaders around the world wanting to learn more about the energy transition, what is possible, and where to start. So to help you stay informed and up to date on best practices, opportunities, risks, and success stories, we created an industry news feed at vector.com/news with all our podcasts, blogs, and newsletter. Check it out and connect with Dan, myself, and the Vector team to learn more. Cheers, and have a good one.